And we are live. Welcome, folks, to episode 3,800 of the Survival Podcast. 3,800 times we have gotten together now over a period of just under 18 years. We'll turn 18 years old. We'll be a legal adult. One of the few legal adult podcasts on the planet, if you measure it that way, I guess. Continuously operating for 18 years. That'll happen in June of this year. But 3,800, always the round numbers like 3,800, 4,000, 3,500, things like that always feel like an accomplishment to me. So celebrate our accomplishment together because this is a community enterprise. What are we going to talk about today? I really didn't dig into current events and any of that stuff last week. The closest we got was my 2.5 hour discussion with Pete Quinones where we dabbled around current, but it was more about what's going on in the world and kind of in league with this show though. Today we're going to look at things that are actually happening in the world today. Not so much news. There is some news here, but more like what's going on? What's happening? And where are we at in the world today from a standpoint of, you know, people like stepping on your throat and telling you to like it and taking away your liberty and things like that. I'm going to lead off today with a short cartoon, about a minute long. It's incredibly dark. It's incredibly dark. And it's dark due to two things, what it says, and the second one, how accurate those things are. It's not Tom and Jerry or something like that, to be clear. This is a creator-created creation. I guess all creations are. You know what I mean, though, in this world. Then we're going to talk about socialist mayors a little bit and a problem that's going on with grocery stores leaving, and that's just the beginning. Have you ever heard the term brain drain? Brain drains also are wealth drains. They're talent drains. There is only one kind of drain. And that is things that things leave. And then the question is, what can fit in the drain? And with this type of drain that these socialists create, everything good goes in the drain and everything bad stays behind. Usually the clog is the bad stuff. In this case, there is no clog. There's just a drain. And when you do this stupid shit in states or cities, the drain is even more apparent than it is when you do it with a country. There's a lot of things that a country can do to keep its citizens from leaving, and not much a city or a state can do. They can threaten, they can say they're going to impose some sort of retroactive tax or something, but it's very difficult for them to enforce anything that happened after a specific date when you said, you know what, fuck it, I'm out of here. Canada's latest call for censorship is just the 1984 Python just tightening its coils. I'll tell you some comments by Carney, the PM in Canada, recently. It's just the same as Europe and Canada seem to be the same. And maybe that's why Canada's talking about joining the EU as though that makes any kind of sense, you know, geographically in any way. It's just like we'd like to give away some more of our citizen sovereignty and create more open immigration in our country because of the EU standards. And then, yeah, that's all that is. I want to talk a little bit about the SAVE Act today. That is a very current news item. I don't know if it has any chance of getting out of the Senate whatsoever. Apparently they do have 50 senators that are on board with it now, but you got filibuster problems and, Leader Thune, who could have changed his position on this a long time ago. For some reason, in spite of the fact that it's something like a 94% issue with Republicans hadn't, and then also, I'll support it. He could actually, there are ways to get past the filibuster in the Senate without the nuclear option, especially on a one-item thing that doesn't cost any money. But we'll see if he's got any stones to act, and I don't think that he does. But I want to explain the FUD, right? Because for years we were told voter ID was going to disenfranchise people of color. And the people of color have spoken and said, what the F are you talking about? So that didn't work, so we had to pivot, and Democrats, I'll give you one thing about leftists, they're great at pivots because they have no moral compass, so it's easy to just change direction with the wind, and now they're telling you if you're a married woman, you won't be able to vote. This is fucking stupid, and even what is required is only required once. And so I want to tell you, if this passed, what it would actually mean and how it would actually work. And by the way, I'm going to tell you this, I think even if it does pass, that the only way they get it passed is say it can't, but it doesn't apply to this election this year because there's all these things that we're going to have to do now, and we're already in the election year, and everything's already going on, and yeah, I think that's what'll happen. And that means it gives them one more election to steal shit and change it back. Then next, well-meaning people are often simply not able to understand statistics and math and how the two go together. I'm going to give you an example. This is a lady trying to help. The spirit of what she's saying, I agree with. The conclusion she spits out make no sense. And the source of her data isn't what she infers. And so we're going to take somebody who, I would say overall, like, I'm in agreement with 85% of her messaging. 15% destroys the whole thing. And I'm doing this today, one, because it's a lesson in how to evaluate things and recognize patterns. And two, because I always say I call balls and strikes, and that means I will take exception with people that I generally agree with when they're wrong or when they're doing things in a disingenuous way. I'm not sure if this is stupidity, lack of understanding, ignorance, or malice that this lady's coming from with. Next, you know, we hear a lot about solar farms and how they are taking away habitat and destroying farmland and blah, 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 blah. You know, I talked about this before, and a lot of what's being done in China actually makes sense with solar farms. I didn't say that their government, with their people, with how they manage their country. I said with solar. The Chinese are pretty smart about efficiency of things. And I just saw a little video, and I thought it gave me an opportunity to talk about this again. And I've seen other instances like this. And I think we really could function stack solar panels, because they don't actually take up space on the ground. They take up space above the ground, and that creates something called shade. And there's a lot of places that we can use shade and other structure to function stack. So we'll talk about that today as well. What do you guys think's going on with the Savannah Guthrie and her mom and the media blitz behind it? I'm not talking about the old lady disappearing. I'm talking about the media blitz. I posted on this last week. It's still going on. Fox News is like the Guthrie channel right now. This doesn't make any sense. Like, there are people that are abducted every day, and sometimes they're pretty little kids, and sometimes they're ugly adults, and sometimes they're pretty adults, and sometimes, you know, whatever, right? And generally speaking, we don't ever hear anything nationally about it, even if there's someone, you know, famous adjacent in this case, because I have no idea who Samantha fucking Guthrie is. I know she's a host of a daytime show, but the only reason I know that is because this happened. So I'm going to say semi-famous, right? This is not, you know, Brad Pitt or some actor like that or something. Her mom disappeared. But what I noticed, like, especially, it seems a little bit let up this week. Last week, for five fucking days in a row during the work week, from about 8 o'clock in the morning till about 4 o'clock in the afternoon, it was wall-to-wall Guthrie coverage. What the fuck is going on? This doesn't make any sense. Well, let me explain, for those that don't ever check the news during the day, right? Let me explain what I mean by wall to wall. I mean that I will often go out into the living room and just watch the news and move around the channels and just see what's going on for like 2-3 minutes, right? And then sometimes I try to do that, I can't get any news. So I'll pick a channel like Fox and I'll hit the fucking pause button, right? And that will spool for 2 hours on my DVR. So I can go back 2 hours and I can fast forward through 2 hours of shit to get past the Pfizer commercials and the Wegovy commercials and all the other bullshit, right? And see, like, well, what's going on? And I'm telling you that I went 2 hours and there was nothing but commercials in this fucking Guthrie bullshit for 2 fucking hours straight. I mean, there wasn't a fucking scrolling thing at the bottom saying that, you know, the aliens were coming or Trump was going to have a baby with Savannah Guthrie or some shit. It was, well, I guess that would have been in there. You see what I'm saying, though? There was nothing. And I saw several days of this happen. And so when it happened, I got it to real time and hit pause again and went back to work. And when I got done working a little bit and went out to check on it again and another 2 hours went by, 4 hours straight. Why? Why that? What's going on that they're, we'll talk about that. Keep that in mind. I want you, if you have a thought on that, put the word Guthrie in all caps and then give me why you think it's happening. And if I see that, I'll start. And when we get to that, we'll roll through you guys. We'll give you some lead up time to that one instead of springing it on you like I usually do. Then the government shutdown that's about to happen, this, and I don't know if they already did or they're about to with DHS. You know, like some of the people that won't get paid will be like the ICE officers and the TSA and stuff like that, right? Well, here's my question for you. They're going to work anyway, and eventually they'll get back paid. But Does this make us ask a question like, maybe we really should go back to when airline security was the responsibility of the airlines? Because airlines are really important, right? Being able to travel is really important. Like, this is a national security issue, so the government should do it. But if the government is subject to shutdowns, I mean, we actually had really great airline screening before TSA, and it was more convenient, and it was less of a bother for everybody. And it was effective. Because what nobody seems to remember about 9/11, especially you young bucks, right, is that the airline screening didn't fail on 9/11 when all this shit started. The airline screening found everything that those guys had, and at the time, the government's edicts of what were allowed included all those things. They didn't sneak anything. They just took it on because they were allowed to. They figured how to eat. They looked at what can we legally bring on an airplane, figured out how to use it to get what they wanted, and then did that. So adding TSA did nothing to make. I would argue that TSA is far less effective than what I remember the airline security being like in the past, even though the past security was much quicker. Much quicker. And they were serving the customer, right? Instead of the state, which is what they do now. And if you think, well, yeah, but see, when it's something really important like national security, like the airlines and whatever, we need a government because the government's, you know, more competent or whatever, has more resources. Yeah, what do you find out? What I just found out about why they shut down an airport, a major airport, now not a Dallas or a Chicago, but El Paso Airport is a pretty big airport, and it's for people traveling in that part of the United States, it's a pretty important airport. They shut it down for 10 days. I won't tell you now, but when we get to it and you hear why, and I can't confirm this, but it's a pretty good bet because the story I'm going to give you is valid. And the fact that they shut the airport down is valid. And it happened in the same place. And we employed some new directed lasers. Weaponry to do this, and it turned out, well, you'll see when we get there. So that's what we're going to talk about today. Before we do, let's go ahead and hear from our sponsors of the day. And sponsor of the day number one today is JM Bullion. You know, I've been recommending you put about 5% of your net wealth into silver and or gold since I started the show in June of 2008. 5 to 10%. I mean, that's literally always been my recommendation, and my real recommendation is 5%. 10% is kind of like, if you go over that, I'm starting to feel uncomfortable with your choice here. And maybe with the way things are lately, maybe I need to modify that a little bit. But I still think it belongs as a anchor point in your wealth preservation strategy. And so what does that mean? That means that you should pay the least for the precious metals you buy that you can and get the best service while you're doing it. And I don't know a place to do that better than JM Bullion. They have better pricing than Monex, Apmex, and Lear Capital. I can talk directly to the president. They've been working with us since 2013. That's what, 13 years in the world of podcasting is an eternity. They have always taken care of our people. And if you're an MSB member, they give you a discount. So the real question would be, why would you buy from anybody but JM Bullion when you're buying silver and gold? Next up today is the Wealth Studying Podcast that comes to you from John Pugliano. He is a member of our expert council and has been working with us since, I think, it's either 2010 or 2011 when I met John. I'm pretty sure it's 2010. He is the real deal, man. He is a podcaster. He is a wealth advisor, but he is also a prepper. He's the gun guy, man. He knows as much about guns as I do. He pretends that he doesn't, but he really does know a lot about guns. He's a reloader. He's a gardener. He stores up the stuff. And he's even a ham radio operator. So he is the real deal. And, you know, I should probably get him on the next workshop if he wants to do it, to bring his little ultralight camper and do another presentation on that as well, because he's got a pretty cool setup for when he's mobile and on the road. That is quite the bug out setup if it was ever necessary for that. So not only is he a great investment advisor that will tell you what he's doing with his money, and his clients' money every week on his podcast. He's also one of us. So check him out today at wealthsteading.com, where you can learn to grow your wealth like you grow a garden. All right, with that knocked out, let us go ahead now and dig into some of the stuff that's going on out there. And I want to start off with this cartoon. And hopefully by playing this, it's not copyrighted. It won't get me demonetized, but whatever. They'll demonetize me. This one's going to get demonetized anyways. Who gives a shit? If it gets taken down, check Rumble out. And I bet you it doesn't get taken down from X or Facebook either, even though they're quite sensory as organizations. I still think it's watch YouTube take this down eventually. Anyway, this cartoon is so accurate and says all the things out loud that most of us know, but we just tend not to say this out loud in public on the internet, all in one place anyway. And again, this is like this cartoon is made by a internet creator who makes content like this coming from this angle. It's not like it worked its way into Tom and Jerry or something like that, but I think this is going to be pretty enlightening. You don't really need, if you're on audio only, you don't really need the video, but you may want to pull this one up to take a look at it. And there's links to all this stuff in the audio notes today.
People are coming back to their consciousness, sir. Did you poison the food supply?
Yes, sir. There's no mineral left in the soil.
Are you feeding them negativity on the news?
Yes, sir.
War and death.
Social media.
Yes, sir. Gender wars.
Damn.
Racism.
It's not enough. They keep coming back. What do we do?
We need to lower their immune systems.
I thought we did that already with the virus, sir. What else can we do?
More poison. We'll put more poison in the crop field.
We use all the poison.
Poison the animals.
The animals.
And tell them to eat the animals.
This is why you're our leader, sir. The poison in the animals.
Train doctors to not address the cause.
I see where you're going.
But only
the symptom.
So they get treated forever and eventually die.
And we still get
the money.
Sir, what about the people that have found cures for these diseases and are trying to help other people cure these
diseases?
We'll
make it punishable by law to say you can cure disease.
What about the people that know the truth about COVID?
Punishable by law to spread misinformation about COVID.
But sir, that's free speech. We can't pass a law like that.
We'll pay social media to take down people that
you
can say the word.
What do you guys think? How scary accurate is that one? It's literally all the things that we've talked about over the years in one little 1 minute cartoon. And I want to say a couple things on this if I could. And one is that it's actually amazing to me how dramatically effective, when properly used, things like animation can be to convey things like this to people that normally wouldn't listen or would be like, oh, this again, right? Oh, this again. Oh, this again. Or, you know, it's just conspiracy theorists or something. There's something about short form content that in of itself has been pretty impressive what's happened over the last, I would say, 6 to 7 years. TikTok and Instagram Reels and things like that. Like, there are so many people now, they're taking in the majority of their content in, you know, 10 seconds to 3 minutes. And because everybody's so time-strapped, at least they think they are anyway, right? And I can cover a lot of ground really fast watching all these people that I like. That's had them. And I wonder if we need to be doing more with that. And I don't just mean me and my show. I mean, like, our community. Do we need to be doing more, not just like, hey, attracting people into gardening and farming and homesteading and all that other stuff, but more like, hey, do you know what's actually going on in the world? Because there's a lot of shit in the world. And what I have found with people, and you guys tell me if you think this is true or not, I have found with a lot of people, you can give them 20 things and they reject 19 of them. But if they'll accept one of the 20 as, yeah, that I've always wondered about that too. That does seem like, and if they dig deeper into that one, it's like starting to pull that thread on the tapestry. And they, well, wait a minute. If that's true, then what about this other thing that was kind of adjacent to that when I heard this list of 20 things? It'd pull a little more thread. And next thing you know, one of us. And I think we need more ones of us. I really do. And of course, that sounds very cult-like and very left and NPC-like. But we do that as a joke, guys. We know what we really want. We want independent thinking people. But to get that, you have to get that kind of red pill experience, right? You have to get Neo out of the fucking Matrix. And I think the real lesson, I mean, I did a whole episode of the Matrix years and years ago. Maybe we need to go back into that, because I think that I'm finding in my work now that we're not talking about Neo the One, but Neo the Everyone. And that in some ways we are all Neo. Everybody is Neo. And you actually become Neo, which means new, when you wake up. So if you'd be interested maybe in hearing me do an episode on the Matrix from that angle, shoot me an email, jack@thesurvivalpodcast.com, TSPC in the subject line, and let me know that. Or anything else you want to let me know. Remember, that is my email for all things. I do not have a personal assistant. No one filters my email. And all my even other emails, you know, like old ones and stuff like that, these forward to the same place anyway. So if you have that email, you have my email, same one my best friends have. Just if it's for the show and you want to make sure I read it, especially if I don't know you, TSPC in the subject line. Let's move on from there. I want to go on next to this. This is going to actually blend a little bit with my later talk on people that think they're helping, but they're not. This person just didn't do it as extremely as others. So I'm actually bringing you the story this person's highlighting. I'm not picking on them, but they inferred something that isn't quite true by adding one single word to what they posted. It'll make sense in a second. So if you're wondering who this upset looking Karen is with soulless SSRI eyes, who I can smell the cat litter and white wine reeking through the screen right now looking at her, this is Katie Wilson. And if you're like, what the hell and who the hell is Katie Wilson? She is the mayor of Seattle. Yes, the fine people of Seattle said, out of our entire city, the person that we think should lead us in the most important job in our city is this Karen. And so they selected her. So, you know, she's white and she's not even trans. It's amazing to me. And she uses she, her pronouns, but they elected her anyway. And they, you know, they ticked a few things off that kept you from going completely a loony bin, but not enough. She's an avowed socialist. And this is something that's beginning to track. The mayor of Minneapolis is a socialist. The mayor of New York is a socialist. The mayor of Seattle is a socialist. There's a lot of other ones that are also socialists. But these people and a few others throughout the country are like, not just they are a socialist because we say so and based on what they do, they actually say they're socialists. They're very proud of it. She likes being a socialist. You can see how happy it makes her by looking at her picture right there. Well, here's what the post says. And then I'm going to tell you what actually is going on, because it's not far off. But this is from Wake Up America on X with a picture of the Orange Man in their little icon. So get what you expect. Seattle's socialist mayor, Katie Wilson, claims she will unilaterally ban grocery stores from closing down in her city. That's not what she said. She's still an idiot, but that's not what she said. The government will force them to stay open. Then he actually quotes her, and this is what she actually said. We cannot allow big grocery chains to close stores at will. Then a person says thoughts, and of course everybody gets all outraged and jumps on it. Hey, she can't do that. Blah. She's full of shit. She can't. Okay, nobody here even bothered to find out what she actually said. I did look it up. I found the video that this is from. The only place I could find that video, because it probably is memory hold, is on a website that puts like an audio watermark over the video where they keep saying their name like every 10 seconds during her talking. You hear the name of the website that published it in the background, and it was fucking annoying. So I didn't want to play it on the air for you, but there is a link in the notes for today's show if you want to go see her say this. But what she actually was saying is, we can't let them close. She never said, I will prevent them from doing it. She said, we can't let them. And together, we can build a Seattle where everybody has all the groceries that they need, man. We can make sure it's not a food desert. She said food deserts are not a natural state. No, food deserts are not a natural state, you freaking leftist bimbo. You're correct. And food deserts do not fucking exist in a natural state. And apparently, your city, which is a foodie city, by the way, I'm just saying, with lots of people willing to spend more money that makes sense on lots of shit, and everybody's walking around high, and if there's an easier person to sell food to than a dude who's on his second doobie of the day, I don't know who it is, right? You got all this going for you in the food space. You've got a lot of local production. You've got a great climate for food production. You're surrounded by great climates for other food production. You're one of the seafood importation capitals of the fucking country, and you have an incredible local seafood market on top of it, and you are sitting in a food desert. And you can't figure out why. It's evil corporations. It's evil corporations that are just doing it to be big meanies. That's funny, because I live in a place where every time somebody farts out of left field, they build a new grocery store. So why aren't they, if they're the same companies, Whole Foods closed, like almost everything in Seattle, Kroger's announced closings, Tom Thumb, like these are the same stores we have. They're not closing here, but they're closing where you are. I know this is going to be hard for this person, but if anybody can get information to her, I would like her to take this sourpuss face of hers. Go find a fucking mirror, Karen. Look in there. There's your problem. You're right. It is not a natural state to have a food desert where people live. It isn't. You made one. You created food desertification. Good job, Karen. Well, this is going to happen more and more all over the damn country. I mean, you guys do realize this. And what it's going to do is create a massive amount of drain, or what I'm going to call politically driven drainage, right? And what I mean by, you know, like you know the old joke of the guy's driving a septic tank around and it says pumping political promises since, you know, 1995 or something. Yeah, I understand that. No, I don't mean a different kind of drainage. I mean, this has happened all over the world. Totalitarian states are formed, and as before they're fully formed, and before the wall comes down and completely locks everybody in, sometimes with a physical wall, sometimes with a control wall, capital controls and other things, the smartest people go, oh, I've seen this one before. I've seen this episode before. I'm getting the fuck out of here. And they start leaving. The thing is, when you do that at a national level, I want you to think about this. Like, one of the easiest countries that you could move to right now and pretty much stay permanently if you wanted to, above board and legally, though you won't have the rights of a citizen at all, is Mexico. It wouldn't be hard at all. And if you live like 15 miles from the border, pick a different – you do Canada. It's a little harder, but you could do it. Right now, I want you to move to Mexico or Canada or your nation of choice that's not your own, that you don't already have a passport that lets you do it. Like there are, like if you're a European and you want to move from France to Spain, it's easy, right? But so other than that, I want you to just move. And you have to figure out how to support yourself, right? Because you're not an illegal immigrant. Right. You have a good life where you are, but you know, you have to get out and now you're going to get out. What's it look like? Would you use the word easy? Would you use the word simple? Of course you wouldn't. It is more than renting a U-Haul truck, isn't it? So, but if I live in Seattle and I don't even want to live Washington and Seattle gets dumb enough, it's not that hard for me to move 30 to 40 miles out of the city. I'd get a job where I don't ever have to go back, is it? And if I live in a state like, oh, I don't know, New York, not that Pennsylvania is the bastion of freedom of the world or anything, but in many ways your position would improve just by going to Pennsylvania. What is easier, moving from New York to Pennsylvania or from Illinois to Texas or from California to, I don't know, Montana? Or moving from one country to another. Well, it's much easier. And then moving from a city, like within the city limits of a city, like people do that every day. That's not even why they did it directly. It wasn't like, I want to get out of the city borders. It was like, I want a house that's more like X, Y, and Z. And the only way to do that is to move over to this other place, this town instead of this city. And the prices get to where I can afford it, right? So what I'm saying is this happens in countries And it usually happens over a period of between about 5 and 8 years as they wind toward full totalitarianism. And that usually means some form of socialism. Okay. And it causes this massive, they call it a brain drain, but it's not just a brain drain because it's not smart people that leave. It's people of higher than average intelligence that have means, that have money. So the first thing you chase away is your producers and your functioning members of society. Okay. And you can do that at a country level. What do you think it does to New York City or Seattle? And it's already happening. Like, these things are always in motion before you notice them. But they're about to experience massive, massive drain. And the people that are piling on in that post that I showed you, they're not wrong. There is nothing she can do. But she can talk like there is something that she can do. And why do you do that? You do it to sell to the dupes that were stupid enough to elect your retarded ass that it's really not you. It's not Seattle. It's the evil corporations. It's the evil Whole Foods. See, Whole Foods hates hippies and hates the left. And because of that, because they're part of the white patriarchy, they're leaving Seattle and moving to Dallas and Fort Worth and opening more stores there instead because they love conservative. Do you see how stupid that sounds? Amazon is pretty much completely pulling out of Seattle. Not just their fresh walk-in stores, but like they'll deliver there, but they're going to do as little as possible in Seattle where they have major presence. Like, major corporations are leaving. There's corporations that they're banking on can't leave. Too much infrastructure, too much money, too much investment. Like Boeing. Like Boeing. One of the largest facilities under a roof in the world exists there. Boeing has been, you know, other than bouncing planes out of the sky, they've also been slowly migrating a lot of what they do to elsewhere. These cities are going to reap exactly what they deserve, which is misery and suffering. And if you live there, I don't fucking care. You fucking deserve it. What about the good people that live there? I told you 6 fucking years ago. What did I say? Somebody please tell me what I was saying every fucking day. About 5 to 6 years ago, every fucking day I said it 3 times in a row. What is it? What did I? Please, somebody put that there so I don't have to tell you what I said. Please, someone tell me what I told people to do. When all this shit, there it is. Thank you, Mick. See, I didn't want to tell you I said it because then you doubt me. Get out, get out, get out. And what did I say? Because, you know, people are going to say now, it's too hard. I can't afford it. If you see what happens to real estate prices, and what did I say would happen? Did I not tell you this would happen? Yes, get out of the cities. And get out of what specific type of city did I tell you to get out of? Right? And people thought it was only because of the term I was using. Because everybody remember what I said about those cities. What was the name I gave those cities? The generic name that I gave for cities like Seattle. Like, there it is. See, look, this is an educated audience. You guys do remember stuff, right? Flashpoint cities. Get out of the flashpoint cities. Okay, name every city that's openly elected a socialist mayor. Is creating this problem, now has people that want to leave and can't because they can't afford to. And I'm going to tell you, while it may have been hard 5, 6 years ago, it's harder now, isn't it? This is exactly what I said was going to happen. So yes, when I say fucking suffer, I'm sorry. For the people that listen to me, if you didn't, and I was told how many times, how many people told me, you're a surrender monkey or some bullshit they make up. People should stay there and fight. They should fight for their cities. You're not going to fight for your cities. This is what you're going to get. You're outnumbered and you're helplessly outnumbered. The freaking reddest states there still have blue cities. What else did I say about cities? Cities are what? Liberal factories. Children grow up in conservative homes in liberal cities, and by the time they're 18, they're closet liberals, and one semester in college, and they're out right? They're out of the liberal closet and they hate their parents. Cities do this. They prime the pump for when that young person leaves home, goes off to university or whatever, they're completely ripe to receive all of this fucking information. I told you this would happen. Here it is. I'm sorry you didn't listen. And I will also tell you, people that vote their way into socialism deserve to have to shoot their way out of it. And that's where these people are. And they ain't going to do it. And, you know, this is the thing. This is why I say suffer through it. Because you still can leave. If you live in a city, the day it becomes a – no, don't wait till they actually elect a Zohar the Destroyer or a Karen cat-smelling chick like this chicken in Seattle or whatever, or that retard up in Minneapolis, right? Don't wait for them actually to elect them. Once you know it's going to happen, start moving now. Get out, get out, get out. Let them freaking choke on their own stupidity, because that's what's going to happen here. All these cities are going to choke, and we need them to choke. This is the other side. This is not just me being an arrogant asshole or whatever. They must fail. They must fail so equivocally that the rest of the country looks at them and goes, yeah, no, we don't know. They can't even look like they kind of sort of made it, because this is going to be the case that they make next. But tell me if you've ever heard this argument before. It only works if everybody does it. Right? It only works if everybody does it. So we need everybody to do it, because then it'll work. They would never make such a – nobody ever would make such a stupid argument, right? Nobody would ever – you've never heard that. You've never heard that before in your life. You've never heard it only works if everybody does it, right? Okay. Let's move on. Canada, surprise, surprise, who seems very excited about the possibility of becoming a member of the EU. That's the European Union. For European countries, even though they're in North America, I think they're trying to maybe leverage things against Orange Man. But the Canadian Prime Minister, that's Carney, he stated, well, that's, I'm going to play you what he said, because again, this and I had this chick, this Lozzie B chick, I had her muted because she's always doing this same thing. Like, it's not good enough just to say what's really happening. You have to twist it just a little bit to make it sound worse than it is, so you get more clickbait out of it. But what he said pretty much tells the tale. Here we go.
Large American online platforms have become seas of racism, misogyny, anti-Semitism, Islamophobia, and hate in all its forms. And they're being used by criminals to harm our children. My government will act. And today we're announcing our plan to fight crime, to protect Canadians, and to build communities that are safe, secure, and strong.
Now, what she says he's doing is saying that they're going to ban X specifically in Canada. And I absolutely believe that that's possible. And that may even be signaled here, because he says social media platforms. He doesn't specifically name X. But we all know the one they hate the most, and it's X. Well, that's because Elon freed it from censorship, and they hate that. Well, they do hate that. But hold on. What did I just tell you? There's less censorship on Facebook right now than there is on X. Now, that wasn't true in the early days of Elon. Not because Elon took away all the censorship, because Elon took away a lot of the censorship and Facebook didn't. Facebook has course corrected because, well, when you start bleeding and you're an actual corporation and you actually care about making money and you can't mandate your service be used, then you start caring. So they adjusted to the market, not because Zuck all of a sudden became a friggin' libertarian or some shit, right? Zuck did it because Zuck likes money. So you don't hear the generalized animosity against Facebook, which is the other giant in the social media space, right? But you do hear it with X, because people listen to Elon Musk. That's why. Because Elon is actively engaged on his own platform, and they don't like him. they know they can create censorship anytime they want. They know they can re-infiltrate anytime they want, except they're worried that they can't re-infiltrate X because Elon, well, he's got more money than God. He doesn't give a fuck. He's more worried about building rocket ships than how much money X makes. He really doesn't care if X just breaks even. And that's scary for them in their future because they're not worried about Zuck right now because they know they can go back and kind of retrofit it. But what I actually think will happen is you're going to get to a point where they're going to start pushing these companies even harder because they've already made this kind of offer you can't refuse, but it turns out you can. Before, if you don't censor these things that we want you to censor, then we're going to ban you in our country. And most companies that are much smaller than this that receive threats like that usually respond with, people know how VPN works. But this is going to become even more complicated because, like, you have this shit. You hear they're coming after our kids. They're coming after our kids. They're using it for crime. You know what they use for crime all the time, dude? People use for crime all the time, your money. Dollars, Canadian dollars, pounds, Australian dollars. They use your money for crime all the time. Apparently, that's not a problem. They use all kinds of things for crime. If somebody's using social media for crime, what are they really using for crime? Devices, right? So you're using cell phones for crime, etc. So what are they talking about doing? They're using the internet to whatever it is, whether it's true or not that they say it's the platform, it's the this. What is the real place that all of it happens? That's not really a place, but we think of it as a place. The internet, which is just interconnected computers. So what they're doing in Australia is they're saying if you're under a certain age, you can't do certain things online. So when you log onto the internet, you need an ID, an internet ID. And that will, among other things, verify your name and your age and your location. So even if you're on a VPN, then, well, maybe you're not allowed to go on a VPN. Why do you need to go on a VPN? That's what criminals use. Criminals use VPNs. I agree. Various government organizations use VPNs all the time. You are criminals. Doesn't matter. It's because people use it and some portion of people might be criminals. We don't restrict it to everyone, guns, anybody, right? It's the same argument over and over again. But what you really see here, all right, I got a retard, and this is what happens to retards. I didn't know if that was just chatter or whatever, but retards go away. That's how it happens. Where do these people come from? Like, why are you wasting your time on listening to somebody you hate voluntarily on a YouTube channel with like 60, 70,000 subscribers? Like, nobody made that person come here. Yeah, bounced. Bounced to hell, right? Gone. But this is the Python approach. So if you want to think of, I hate using snakes as the devil or the bad guy because I actually love snakes, as many of y'all know. Of the herpetology enthusiast since I was a little tiny kid. But it works for this analogy, so I'll use it. So there's two ways that snakes tend to be dangerous. One is venom and one is constriction. And now most constrictors are no danger to people, but they can be, right? And like, so if you have a 400-pound retic python that decides it wants you dead, you have a problem, right? Just like if it's a black mamba, you have a problem. Now, what does the mamba do? Strike. It happens in the blink of an eye, a fraction of a second, and it's gone, right? It's gone. It's too late. The venom, even though the person's still alive, they're going to die with the right snake, right? Especially if you can't get immediate treatment. So it's an instant hit. How does a constrictor kill? It wraps around an animal. And this is what I think a lot of people don't know. They think it just squeezes. It's more like a ratchet. So every time that animal tries to breathe, what happens to your ribs when you try to breathe? They go in, right? You take in and then exhale. So inhale, you know, the lungs collapse. And so what this animal does is it wraps around and its main thing, once it's got a grip, is never give back a millimeter, a micrometer. And it waits. So it takes less effort to, like, if you've ever arm wrestled someone who can beat you if you go straight toe to toe, but you're close matched and you put your effort into just holding instead of trying to win, you can wear them out sometimes. And that's what this, and they have every advantage in the world. So every time that breath goes in, it takes another millimeter. And as the animal begins to panic and have a more rapid respiration trying to escape, that ratchet continues. It's a slow tightening of the coil. And eventually, our little friend, the rat or the mouse, his face turns blue, his tail turns blue and goes straight out, a little turd pops out, and he dies. And then the snake swallows him. That's the government. That's the 1984 approach. See, the problem with 1984, the novel, it didn't explain how they got there. It was more like, here we are, and this is all the misery that comes with being here. And there was some story, you know, if you don't do the movie, if you actually do the book, there is some story progression in it, but nowhere near, like, starts out lily perfect the way things really are in the world, and then slowly, it would have been a series of books to do it kind of where it would do it justice. It'd be like the good old days, the preamble, and then the disaster. That's kind of how that progression goes. We've been in the 1984 world of New World Order, New World Controls in earnest for way longer than I'm about to say. But at the current tick, with the current capabilities and technology, we've been there for about 26 years, right around 99, 2000. That was the big flip where everything started to change and all the messaging changed. And the angle changed, and the means by which the control was exercised was changed. And so we've had 26 years of the snake just tightening the coils. And things like you see here with Carney, the reason I bring that up is what you'll see right now is him bring up something like this, and it may take years for it to play out. But the gap of how long it takes between saying the stupid thing, convincing the people the stupid thing isn't stupid, and getting the thing done is getting much shorter, much shorter. And what will we have in that world where they take away our ability to communicate with each other? Because know this, this internet thing that we all use today, that is the, it is the greatest step of freedom that man has ever had. 71 in a different way. 71 in a different way, Rona. I know what you're saying. And you're talking about Bush Sr. there, too. And Bush Sr. actually correlates a little bit, but it's really the Bush 2 on years because we had the technology. So that's the thing. We didn't have the technology yet since they got the technology. And I was bridging there. So here's where I'm going. We have this misguided belief that the internet that we see today was what the internet was destined to become. And what the people that created the early internet believed that it would become from the government side of things, from Al Gore's side of things, took the initiative and created the internet. No, you didn't, you dumbass. But, you know, people believe it. But the government did make the internet happen. The government funded a ton of shit so that the internet could be a thing. Because it, without the infrastructure and without deregulation and without certain accommodations and without certain incentives, the internet could have never exploded the way that it did. And I mean globally, not just the United States. But their version of the internet wasn't this. It was one of those things that was too big to control when they let it out. And they would very much like to put it back into their original viewpoint. Do you know that the United States government at one time wanted to make email by private carriers illegal and have email be a paid service because it was dangerous to the post office and the environment? Yeah, those were the two arguments. And they even did create a paid email service, a paid government email service that they had to give up on because nobody would fucking use it, because actually making it illegal for someone who heard you've got mail to have an AOL email address was not tenable at the time. They wanted the internet to be something that they controlled, a regulated utility. And that's what the whole net neutrality is a gateway into when they tried to sell you on that. The whole internet was going to blow up and go away because net neutrality was going away under Trump 1. It went away. You never heard another word about it. Nothing ever happened because it's all a lie. It was all bullshit. And I knew that because my time with net neutrality goes all the way back before the podcast. 2003, 2004, 2005, I was writing about that shit on a technology blog I used to have. It was called ComTech News. It's gone, long since gone. It's ancient history in the world of the internet. So that's what they want the internet to be, a mechanism of control. If you control access, it becomes a mechanism of control. Oh, you know, user 1137 alpha 97 bravo tango 0138-X just logged on. These are the approved places he can go and the approved things he can do. That's the goal. And everything you see, like you just saw from Carney, is that's what it's really about. It's not about banning the platform in of itself. It's about the regulation and control of the greatest communications mechanism that's ever been created. Fortunately for us, I don't think that they're going to be able to pull that off. Okay, got another one for you. This is an example of someone trying to help. We had two earlier examples, but this one really, really goes off the rails. Even though I agree with what she's trying to do, okay? Because I think if you can't criticize the people you mostly agree with, then your criticism can't be taken seriously. So I want you to listen to this, and she's wrong, but she's right, if that makes sense. I'll explain it after she's done, or as much as I'm going to let you listen to here.
The FDA, Dr. Prasad, came out and said the following things. This is a bombshell that our federal government is fessing up. One, they said that these shots killed more children than they saved. Killed more children than they saved. The risk of death from one shot of the COVID shot was 3 in 1,000. And people had more than one, right? If you got the initial, you got two shots. That's a risk of 6 out of 1,000. That's unbelievable. That's at least 1,000 times higher than the risk of death to that child from COVID. 1,000 times higher. So first of all, the fact that our FDA said that, amazing. He also called these shots gene therapy.
All right, that's enough for her, okay? This is one of those people that's on your side that you probably would do better if they weren't, if they went off and did something else with whatever talent they actually have. I want to start out with the math problem, right? Trying to make something linear that's not linear. Did any of you catch it? And let's not even worry about whether her numbers, her base numbers are accurate, right? But if you had a risk of 3 out of 1,000 dying from a specific vaccine, doesn't matter if it's COVID or not, any vaccine, for any medical treatment, if the person receives one, the risk of death is 3 in 1,000. The most you could say, if you wanted to go to 6, is it would be 6 in 2,000 if they had it twice. Without having any more information, which she does not and never claims to in the other 45 minutes of rambling she does. Okay. The real answer is actually the reduce is probably the risk is probably reduced in subsequent injections. I'm called anti-vax and pro-vax at the same time by people who have no idea what the fuck they're talking about. I've always had the same viewpoint of any medical treatment. If the risk of the illness exceeds the risk of the treatment, I will use the treatment. If the risk of the treatment exceeds the risk of the illness, I will not. That is not pandering to anybody. That's fucking logic. And I can't trust the government's numbers, and I damn sure can't trust the drug company's numbers. So something new, I have to sit back and watch to see what happens. That turned out to be a very good choice in regard to that particular jab, right? Okay, the people that made the choice to wait and see, none of us fucking regret our actions. So why am I picking on this lady? Because here's the reality. In spite of all the problems that it caused, and in spite of how ineffective it really was and continues to be, millions upon millions upon millions of people got this shot and had no real reaction to it of any negative consequence that we can see anyway yet. Now, I do believe the upticks in cancer and myocarditis and other things can be attributed, at least in part, to it. Don't think I'm defending the drug companies. I'm just saying there's a whole lot of people that I know, because of their jobs, requirements, things like that, they got the shot, the booster, the next. They kept getting boosters until they could legally or logistically not do it anymore, and nothing really happened to them. I also know quite a few that a lot of shit happened to. But I do know this. Almost everybody who had one that had a serious problem with it, didn't get the second one. And then this goes back to the correlation with the original virus. And this is why I told everybody to relax in the beginning when they were given these huge death estimates and why it was bullshit. It looks really bad whenever any new illness that is novel in strain shows up, especially if it doesn't have an analog, like it didn't evolve from another thing and become more virulent or something like that. It really is kind of new to you anyway, and to our, you know, anybody that's alive right now, like the standing four generations have never really been exposed to it. Well, you're going to have on first pass what looks like a really high death rate. There's going to be a whole shitload of people that get a little bit sick and don't really know it and just go on with their life. And before they're told it's a problem, they don't even know that's what they had. And there's going to be a whole bunch of people who have, you know, so mild of symptoms, they don't even know they're sick. And there's going to be people like, it's a cold, it's a flu, it's whatever, and it's not a big deal. And then they'll only diagnose the people with the new problem who show up first. Does this sound familiar? Like, did I say this like 5 years ago, 6 years ago, right? They'll show up first because they're so sick, you got to figure out what's wrong with them, and you'll find this thing, and the people you will initially test for it will all be the people that are really, really sick, who are all really high at risk, and this will make the death rate, the case fatality rate, look way higher than it is. And then once that goes through, you'll get a better handle on it. It'll be like the third round before you're like, oh, so actually the risk of death from this thing is something like 0.01% or something, whatever it ends up being. Very, very low. And you'll also be like, that's among everybody, but if we break it down to only, you know, people under 60 who are in general health, good health, then it's even lower than that. But you won't know. How's that work with two shots? Well, the person that is likely to die from the most common reason people die from a injection of any kind, which is a form of anaphylactic shock, will in fact, whatever's in there that triggers that in them will kill them when they get their first shot. Which means if it didn't fuck you up the first time, the odds it will fuck you up the second time go down. Now, I know some of you are special people. So hold on. Again, we're talking about a bell curve here. We're talking about that middle 76%. That's the vast majority. And when you go out way over on one end of the bell curve down where it's like a quarter of a percent and say, but I had it because I had to, and the first one didn't really do nothing, and the second one fucked me up, you're the exception, and it doesn't change the math that this woman is trying to sell you. You understand that? And it's also this case. The odds that you'll flip a coin and it will come up heads are 50-50. This is a math constant, by the way. When I flip the coin the second time, the way that it comes up, the odds are still the same as 50-50. It's 50-50 the first time, and it's 50-50 the second time, and the 100th time I do it is 50-50. Now, if I do it 100 times, I'm going to be very close to 50 and 50. As the numbers prove themselves out across the whole. But each individual flip, the third flip is not affected by the second flip, and the third flip will not affect the fourth flip. Do you understand that? This is a person who understands basic math. They can do problems like 3 plus 3 divided by 2 in their head, right? Okay, we're having issues on X. If you're there and you can still hear me, you might want to bail somewhere else because it just came up with a warning. And X has been having problems today, from my understanding. But that's what I'm saying. It's like she can do that math. So she thinks that math applies to all things with no understanding of like statistics and, you know, representation and, you know, maybe even a little bit of order of operations concepts. And it's a person trying to help, but you'd be better off if they didn't. I want to move on to some other stuff, though. There are some things that we can talk about. Oh, I missed one. Let me pull that off. I missed a bullet point here. Let me make sure I didn't miss any others. Okay, I want to talk about the SAVE Act for a minute before we move on to some more material type things. So if you've heard about the SAVE Act or the Save America Act, this is voter ID. And as of right now, the proposed legislation does something very uncommon in our government, though don't think there might not become a back door to getting enough people on board to get it done to put more shit on top of it, okay? But right now, it's a single-issue bill. Kudos. right? And it's probably a single issue bill because leadership on the GOP side hated it until it got too big to where they couldn't pretend to hate it anymore and they had to pretend to love it. So it was drafted by people willing to push hard for something, people like Thomas Massie, who got accused of not voting for it, even though he voted for it, because everybody's a fucking liar in the media and government, except for a few people, and the people that aren't liars have to be lied about. That's how that works. But it's a very clean bill. And it basically says if you want to register to vote in federal elections, and I want to be clear about that, if your county you're in says we don't care if illegals vote for county government, then unfortunately they can let them do that. Might be why you have some socialist mayors and what's not. I'm just saying. Like that's something that the federal government doesn't have authority over under our Constitution. But if you're voting for a president, a senator, a member of the United States House, that's a federal election. And to vote on those federal ballots, you have to have registered to vote and prove you're the person who registered. That's the gist of it. But it also says, well, you have to be a citizen, so you have to prove citizenship. And so for a very long time, the left has screamed this is somehow racist. People of color will be disproportionately affected by this. They love to say that. It doesn't matter what the issue is. That is a winning line for them. Except when it's so retarded on its face that the people of color that you don't even know, that you pretend to know, that you pretend to care about, go, wait a minute, motherfucker. Hold on there. I got ID. What are you talking about? And it's a very easy one and a very big layup shot to hand to like right-wing influencers to go out in a city street and just start walking up to black people and go, hey, man. They said that if you need ID to vote, you won't be able to vote. Do you have ID? Do you know how to get ID? And they get offended. And that's what you don't want if you're leveraging a demographic for that demographic to be calling you fucking retarded. Right? You don't want that. That doesn't work for them. Like, okay, so now we've said we can't criticize these people, and they're criticizing us, so we can't criticize them back. So what do we got to do? In the words of Ross on Friends, pivot. You got to pivot. And where do you pivot to? Well, you pivot to the group that never lets you down if you're the left. The group you can always count on to believe your bullshit and repeat it without thinking for one fucking second what it is. Liberal women. There is no more reliable demographic in the world for the Democrats than liberal women. So you say, well, it's women. What do they care about? Well, they care about themselves, especially liberal women. They really care about themselves. Tell them they won't be able to vote. But that doesn't make any sense. But wait, hear me out. Tell them if they're married, they won't be able to vote. Wait a minute. That doesn't make any sense, but let's rewind here. Most liberal women today are foregoing marriage anyway. It doesn't matter. It's still about them because they could be married or they know someone who's married. Or they might want to get married someday even though they're 68 years old and own 5 cats, right, and have never been married or in a serious relationship. They'll believe it. Okay. Okay. If we can come up with a convincing reason for this group of people, you've convinced me. Yeah, they do pretty much believe anything. But as dumb as that demographic is, how do we sell it to them? How do we tell them being married will be the reason they can't get elected? Well, here's what we'll say. You have to prove your citizenship based on your name. When you got married, if you took your husband's name, now your birth certificate doesn't match your driver's license, so you won't be able to vote. And then this is all said from a standpoint of making people think. And I want, if anybody here has felt that this is what's being said, let me know. Just say me in the live chat. Did it feels like what they're saying, and they know it feels like this, even though they're not coming out directly saying because it would be too easy to repeat or to refute, that when you go to vote, you're going to have to come in there, you're going to have your ID, your voter registration card, and your birth certificate. You got to have them all, right? You got to have them all, and you have to put them down on a table, and some, you know, election Karen is going to check them with her little specs, check her list, and if all four of them match, check you off and say, here's your ballot. I mean, that's how this is being put out, isn't it? That's not how it works at all. When you register to vote for the first time, you must prove that you are a citizen. The Mies are coming in. You felt that way, right? Like that's what they're selling, right? When you you know what register to vote is, right? You fill out I want a voter ID. If you're already registered to vote, in most instances, you won't have to do anything. And all that will have to happen is your name on your voter registration and your government issued ID have to match. That's it. So literally you do the same thing, except when you go to vote and they look at the voter rolls to see if you're registered and you say, my name is John Smith and I live at this place. They go, John Smith. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. You're in the right place. This is where you're supposed to vote. Here's your ballot. Go vote. That's it. That's the whole thing. It'll be like buying beer. You say you're over 21. You look kind of young to me in spite of that gray beard there, Jack. Let me see your 1970. Wow, you're old as shit. Here's your beer. Like that. Just like everything else you use ID for. More. Let's say you are a woman. You did take your husband's name. You went from Smith to Johnson. You aren't registered to vote, and you decide you want to register to vote. So now you go down to register to vote. You fill out your form. You provide proof of identification. If, like a huge portion of the United States, your driver's license or state-issued ID is a quote-unquote real ID, that's all you need. They'll be able to verify in the system that Mary Johnson is, in fact, a U.S. citizen. Dun-da-da! Done. Okay? If you've never registered to vote and you don't have to have a real ID, then what you would need is your birth certificate, right? And your marriage license, which, by the way, eventually you're going to need that to get a new ID from the state anyway. There's very few places left where you can opt out of real ID, and there's going to be less and less over time. And I know how some of you feel about real ID. They're making a list. You're already on all the list. The United States, your Social Security number guarantees that you're on the list, right? I don't need real ID because I have a passport. A passport is a real ID. Different form. So if you have a passport or a government-issued real ID and you are an American citizen and you've never registered to vote and you want to register to vote, that's all you will need. And no matter what you need, once you have it, once you've registered, the only thing you will need is the same fucking ID that you carry everywhere you go and use when you buy something like alcohol or want to get into a fucking club or want to open a bank account. That's it. That's the whole thing. Every single word the left has used to object to this is a lie. And I don't use, for some of you that might be wandered into this live or somebody told you about it, you're new to the show or whatever, you might not understand this, but I don't usually say that. I usually pull apart messaging and like, this is true and they're using it to sell this lie and they're actually right about this and they're kind of wrong about that, but that's more opinion and this is factually differentiated. And that's how I usually approach this. I can't hear. There's not a word they have used to oppose this that is not complete fucking lie. Nobody's going to be disenfranchised. Nobody can't figure out how to get ID. You can't function in society without ID. And then some of you are like, well, I believe in the sovereign citizen. You're not voting anyway. Then shut up and go away. And your vote doesn't fucking matter. I don't want to hear about the fucking 0.25% at the edge of the fucking line. Let's talk about the reality. Let's talk about the reality. So, but why do you care, Jack? You don't even vote. It doesn't mean that I don't believe elections should be free and fair. Right? Doesn't mean that I don't believe that. I mean, you guys participate in it. I look at elections this way. It tells me who the fucking country is becoming. I've had a lot of discussions with people on social media about that, but you don't vote. So are you saying voting matters? I'm saying voting tells me a lot about you who vote, where your mindset is as a people at the time, who voted for what, where, and when. Gives me that information. It's a self-imposed poll that encompasses tens of millions of people, hundreds of millions of people, 150 million people a year, or every federal election year, right, every other year, 100 to 200 million people in total vote. That's a big sampling of the country. That's like half the country. And that's enough to get your aggregate averages, and it tells me how people in California or Washington or Texas or Florida or nationwide or rural versus urban or white versus black or male versus female think. We can break down all those demographics from that. Why do you think they really have you do it? It gives you the sense of control, and it tells them what message to use to control you better next. That's what it is. You didn't think you actually had a say in shit, did you? You have a decision in how what they're going to do to you is marketed. You do you and I'll do me on the voting, but if we're going to talk about something, let's be honest about it. And no, nothing is done at all by the SAVE Act that's going to prevent any meaningful number of people from voting. You know how they say, it's a very small number of fraudulent votes. Okay, I'm glad you agree that a very small number is insignificant. So I'm going to tell you that the number of people who will be adversely affected in their ability to vote is probably a lot smaller than the number of people who currently vote illegally. Because the number of people that vote illegally, guys, it's not just about illegals voting. In fact, that's the least of the problem. And you notice that for some reason, even the people championing this aren't permitted, apparently, to tell you who the big problem is. The big problem is the one person that goes to all the apartment complexes when all the ballots get mailed out and looks in the garbage can right next to where the giant thing of all the mailboxes in the building are for all the people that open their mailbox and go, I don't care about that. It's called ballot harvesting. And they pick them all up and they fill them all out and they drop them all off in the boxes. And then there's no verification that the person that's name is on the ballot actually voted. Or the people that are going out and doing this in nursing homes and shit like this. You said you wanted to vote for this one, Grandma. That's the problem attempting. Remember I always said, anytime you look at legislation, potential or existing, what problem are you trying to solve and what problem are you actually addressing? The problem here, or you know, you don't want to drill, but you want a hole, right? The other way of looking at the same thing. The problem here isn't necessarily illegal citizens voting. It's votes that are being counted by people who didn't or people who didn't legitimately. It doesn't matter why it's an illegitimate vote. It matters that. One more thing before we leave this one. I always stay open to the fact that I could be wrong. Right. And I've never told anybody not to vote because I don't. And maybe we do need voting this way. Right. And maybe it is the answer. And maybe I am wrong. I do know one thing, though. The only way you can run a republic where people will look and see legitimacy in that republic as that republic is marketed as a democracy, which it is. It's what's called, by the way, for you purists, this is hard for you to understand. There's nuance to everything. We are a representative democracy in the form of a republic. Okay? We are a representative democracy in the form of a constitutional republic, or you can change it around. We're a constitutional republic in the form of a representative democracy. Pick those votes. The population, including the losers, have to have a reasonable expectation of legitimacy. They have to see the election as legitimate. There's always been people screaming and crying that their other side cheated. That goes back to like some of the first elections. But I would say up until the big hanging Chad fiasco of Bush the second, no one really said the election wasn't legitimate in mass. There's always your special people and your professional agitators, right? There were plenty of people said about Reagan was accused of that in the 1984 election, where it was one of the greatest landslides of all time. There is, you know, nobody with a brain and an IQ over 80 claimed it unless they knew what they were doing. And then Bush second election, it was typical. It went back to typical. Grumble, grumble, grouse, grouse. We don't like it, but he won, right? Then Obama. Nobody questioned the legitimacy of the election under Obama. No, when I say nobody, again, bell curve, majority, vast majority. From Trump forward, Trump, Biden, Trump, we've had serious questioning of the integrity of elections by both sides when they didn't get what they want. If you want elections to do what elections are supposed to do for a republic, the loser has to be like this in the end. Damn it, I hate, but next time We can move things more back in our direction. That's just what people want. It's the system I'm part of. If they have to accept my results when they're positive, you have to have that. Even if it's immediately, I'm going to go back to fighting for what I want. They have to accept the election as legitimate. If you don't have that, you don't have anything. You have a nation that loses trust with each other, easily divided, easily conquered, and easily turned into a true dictatorship. So why do you think they're doing it? So what I think a lot, and this is, there's, you notice that the Republicans are like, yeah, we support this, or like, it's kind of like Biden in the one debate where they said, put your hand up if something, I don't remember what it was. And he was kind of like he wasn't sure if he was supposed to put his hand up or not. That's how they're very, very tacit, right? Very, very lukewarm to it. And some of the key Republicans, like Leader Thune, like Mitch McConnell. And of course, Murkowski and Collins, who Maine and Alaska, you guys are stupid. That's all I got to say, man. So stupid. Because they're all, so how are these two women Republicans? Really? They're both just useless. Useless space occupiers in the United States Senate. What's the problem with this? Well, it largely would restore faith in the elections. You'd think elected officials would like that, but no. They're all in on together, man. It's WWF from 1984. Hogan and Macho Man, man. They're going to fight each other to death. Then they become good friends, and they don't like each other again, but they're good friends all the way through, hanging out in Tampa and snorting coke together, right? That was the 1980s and early 90s. Tampa Bay, Tampa, Florida is where everybody hung out. From the WWE, it's where all the rich stars were, and they were all doing blow together all the time. That's your Congress, man. I can't come up with a better example. All right, so next up, let's talk a little bit about solar here in a different way, like in a positive way, and address some of the common complaints about solar. And what I've heard, and it absolutely can be true, is that, you know, we have this wonderful farm field, and the farmer can't make enough money, and the solar company comes and says, we'll pay you a lease, just like gas and oil, of, you know, X percent of the generated power, and we're going to put all these solar panels out and use your land for it, and now it comes out of being farming land that can, you know, that can actually help people. Well, first of all, it doesn't have to be the case. Second of all, that does not happen as often as people claim. And usually when you see a field that's filled up with solar panels, it's not a place that 2 years ago was growing soybeans and corn anyway, which we also don't need. There's a lot of ways we could be, you know, deploying solar where the byproduct, which is shade. Solar panels, any that I've seen ever, never sit at ground level. Now, yeah, you know, I'm not talking about putting them up on roofs or anything. I'm talking about ones that are on stands, right? They're always up off the ground, which means 99% of the ground is still there. It's still open. Now it's shaded. So if I want a row crop, corn, obviously this is bad. But there's a lot of things I could do, and I'm going to talk about a few of them, but I want to show you this first. This is in China, and I'm not going to play it because it's got weird, stupid music that will add nothing. I'm just going to move it a little bit manually by hand so you can see what it's showing. It's showing boats on a very large lake, and they're driving this boat, like kind of like a Zodiac, underneath the solar panels. Now, the guy that posted this, not this account, the original account, the one that I saw posted, said these are floating. If you look at them, these are not floating. These are anchored in the water. It's like, you know, like putting up a bridge or something. And then they have solar panels on them. And you can see right there, for those on the video, you see that line. You can see where the shade is. And in between, we have the sun hitting the water and we have the sun shading the water. Now, of course, as the sun moves, that shadow will drift, right? We got shadow drift in that. And as that happens, areas that were shaded will become sunned, and that were sunned will become shaded. Keep that in mind for now. I want to talk about what that would do on your average lake in America, especially any lake that already has nearby power transmission capability because the dam is making hydro. Because now we could add more power generation to those, especially the ones where the dams make some hydro, but it's not like the Columbia River in Washington where it's making like all the power they can use and more. We have a lot of dams that are making power, but it's, you know, still, if you look at the entire service area, hydro makes up 10, 15, 20% of the power. So more power is good. If you put that on a lake, and with our fucking rednecks in this country, because I guarantee you this shit ain't going to happen in China because they will kill you if you do it in China. They'll shoot you right off them. But can you not see rednecks climbing up on there and jumping off of them and something like that? So you got to do something that makes the make them redneck proof. Like you squirrel proof a bird feeder, you got to make it so it's impossible to get up there. And then you also have to market it for the good that it does. So all the rednecks with bass boats will police the rednecks with speedboats. Because it's the speedboat rednecks that are going to, and pontoon boats that are going to do this party shit. You make it completely okay for people in the summertime and all to pull up under there in their boat and tie off to one of them poles and sit there in the shade. Whether they're drinking a beer or fishing, it doesn't matter. And you say, as long as nobody damages them, we'll stay that way. You got a self-policing redneck force right now. And them rednecks live all the way up in the north, too, by the way. There are rednecks in Connecticut and Rhode Island and New York. And hey, and if you don't believe me, there's a song by Aaron Lewis called Northern Redneck. Okay? And so that animal's – but what would it do ecologically for that lake? It's not going to hurt it. All those poles? Crappie and other fish, but especially – anybody knows – if you're in a lake with a lot of crappie on it and you find a pylon and you vertically jig right adjacent to that pylon, if you're going to catch crappie anywhere, assuming the depth is right for the season, it's going to be there. They relate to that structure. But all kinds of fish will relate to that structure because when it's a billion degrees out in August, fish relate to shade. It becomes another form of edge. And I can tell you this for a fact. Because I used to fish a lake, you can look it up if you want to see where it is, called Joe Pool. When I first started this podcast all the way back in 08, it was only about 10 minutes from my house. And there's a bridge that goes across a narrow part of the lake. This is about an 8,000-acre lake. And in the afternoons, the sun would be on the west side of that bridge, and there was a row of buoys, a no-wake zone, basically. When you're going under the bridge, slow down to a no-wake. And that shadow would be just inside those buoys. And 4 or 5 o'clock in the afternoon, if I hit that lake when it was still blazing hot out, I could go right to that shadow and I could troll about 2 miles an hour in that shadow using a trolling technique called Hell Pet, which is a pet spoon behind a hellbender lure that run right at 20 foot. And there would always be white bass in there. And I could go there and in 15 minutes, put 25 fish in a live well. 15 to 30 minutes, and then go catfishing for the rest of the day or whatever. Especially if I had somebody with me where one guy drives the boat and the other guy reels them in. I mean, every pass, how do you do that? We're pulling in two. Two per pass because you put a pet spoon and a little grub behind the hellbender, and the hellbender acts like a little bitty downrigger. The hellbender is a big crankbait. You take the hooks off it, you put a leader on it, and you put – again, you put a little lure called a pet spin at the end, but about halfway between the hellbender and the pet spin, you put this little jig, like a little curly tail. And it looks like one fish chasing another. And we troll through there and we just slay them. And then once the shade moved, like in the middle of the day when it was under the bridge, right there is where you would catch the crappie and the catfish, just because they're related to the shade. Many of you have fished shade like that. So, you know, I've got structure, I've got shade, I've got everything that I put on that lake for that solar farm enhances the habitat in the lake for humans and fish and other marine life. Now, where else could we do this? Can you not see some of the places that we used to farm and irrigation's become way too expensive and things like that, and we've had degraded soils? If instead of covering the whole field with solar panels, which, by the way, nobody ever does anyway, we put enough space in between them to make it legitimately possible to farm in the interrow of panel. And we space the panels specifically based on the time of the year of farming, the angle of the sun, and the size of the equipment used to provide shade in an optimal way to benefit the plants. We could open up entire new markets that way, growing things more effectively that we don't think we can actually grow very well in some climates. Because some climates get very cold, but they have blazing summers. So they're not your tropical climates. And even with tropical climates, it's the case that a lot of your southern climates, your subtropics, your tropics, the plants that are most useful to humans there don't grow in full sun. They grow in partial shade. And then, well, what about all the deserts and the critters? And you don't think a desert fucking lizard would be like, holy fuck, check out the structure, all the habitat, the shade, all the things that bring insects into here. And whenever it rains, of course, now that water is going to run. Since we know the angle, we can actually design it to channel water. I actually think that if we approached it, especially at a large scale level, solar panels wouldn't be just about producing electricity. In fact, we might consider the electricity the byproduct. If you did it right, it is a design element for an agricultural system or for a social system or for a recreational system. If you do it right, you have to look at it that way. If it produces enough electricity to pay for itself and its upkeep, if that's all that it does, then I get the structure for free. Now what can I do with the structure? Do you understand that? This is like the people that are like, hey, I have a Bitcoin miner. You know what I should do? I should vent the heat into this thing and make beef jerky with it. Or I should vent the heat into this greenhouse so I can grow more food in the winter with it. Or I should vent this heat into my house so I don't have to pay to heat my house as much. And if it makes enough Bitcoin to pay for itself, I get the heat for free. You see how that works? It's, guys, patterns. Patterns, patterns, patterns. Patterns and system design together are the number one ways that we can fix the problems that we have as a society and as people. And the thing that gets in the way of it isn't the logistics of doing it. It isn't the feasibility of doing it. It isn't a lack of knowledge as to how to do it. It's government. Government gets in the fucking way of anything. Of anything. Not many row crop farmers want to do that work. They like driving tractors. But see, that's the thing. Tugger's saying that. I could build that system so that if you have a 18-foot cut with your equipment, we put the rows of the panels 36 feet plus the tolerance distance necessary between them to get enough solar exposure. The farmer can now drive one pass this way, turn around, drive one pass this way, and go to the next row. And everything's the same, except instead of destroying the entire farm, we've actually made the farm more productive per acre planted. Because it's not how much money you make, it's how much money you keep. And the farmer still has the royalty from the solar company. And ecologically, we get the benefits as well. And that's just one application. And this is another thing that you've got to understand about this. The problem that people are pointing to, the solar panels take away the ecological necessity of a farm, is bullshit. That's not a problem. Show me 10,000 acres of solar panels all touching each other anywhere in the world. Show me. I know there's your little experimental spot with all of the mirrors from, 30 years ago hitting the tower and heating it up or whatever. And you can probably find a picture of some big shit. Show me 5,000 acres of solar panels in one place. Show it to me. Because the farms we're talking about, you don't even get on the grid of being paid attention to with 1,000 yards. These are 1,000 acres. These are 5,000, 10,000. A lot of these farms are 40,000 acres. There probably ain't 40,000 acres of fucking solar panels in fields in total in the country, let alone a single farm of that size has been replaced with them. Nor do we need these mega farms like this anyway. This country's feeding the rest of the fucking world with all that gruel, and they're making our own people sick with it. We could take 25% of what's being farmed for grains, convert it into grazing silvopasture, and feed everybody much healthier for less money and still have plenty of vegetation to go with it. So what problem are you trying to solve? I'm trying to solve a problem of how do we make the generation of electricity using solar energy more useful to humanity. That's the problem I'm trying to solve. The problem they're trying to solve is people don't like solar, so they're going to get any reason to hate it. Whatever, man. Whatever. You do you, I guess. All right. I want to ask you guys now, what do you think's going on with the Guthrie Blitz? And I know I only have four things started. I think all of them or three of them are in response to this. And what I mean by this is we had a woman, if you've been living under a rock and hadn't heard nothing about this, and honestly, if you're online only, you might not have heard much about it. This story has not caught the interest of the general population of the country. And I know that because I haven't seen anybody discuss it on X or Facebook or whatever, except when I brought it up, and I brought up the issue I'm bringing up now, which isn't, oh God, I hope we find her. It's why is this happening? So this woman, Guthrie, Samantha Guthrie, Savannah, whatever the fuck her name is, she's in some morning show for ABC, I think. And her mom got abducted is what it looks like. About 10 days ago, maybe a little further now back. They found some blood on her porch. They have a video of some retard in a mask wearing like black nitrile gloves trying to hide the Ring camera, make it not see by sticking a plant in front of it or whatever. He looks like he has no idea what he's doing. And apparently he or some person connected to him took her, and they don't know where she is. And they don't really have anything to go on. Like, this is groundbreaking, a major, you know, lead that we have, this video of this retard. No, it's not. It could be anybody. Right? That could be anybody. Somebody's going to see it. No, they're not. Right? And so they're trying to find this lady. And there's been a couple of communications that went to TMZ instead of the police demanding Bitcoin. And I immediately, when that started, I'm like, these people don't know where this woman is. They're just like, if you're dumb enough to send it there, I'll have it. Right? And I'll mix it or whatever so you can't trace it. And that's led to a whole bunch of the media talking bullshit about Bitcoin that they don't have 1% right about, by the way, but I'll let that go. My bigger issue is that this has been running like nothing I've ever seen, right? The last time I saw this much go on and people are saying, is it a distraction? Yeah. I'm asking from what? Distraction from what? What is the thing going on right now? It's so important to them that they're going to do this. And I also say, like, it's not ABC and NBC, and they like this. The lady that's actually the daughter works for ABC, and ABC's not running it this way. Fox is running this just like they ran COVID in, let's say, February, March of 2020. I mean, there is, when I say wall to wall, I really don't think that some people that haven't seen what I'm talking about really get what I mean. I mean, there's not 30 seconds dedicated for 4 to 6 hours to anything but this. This week hasn't seemed as bad, pretty bad. But last week, I'm telling you, I would go out there right before I started the show, and if my wife's off doing something or whatever, so she's not watching anything, I'd put Fox News on. I hit pause. Like I said, my DVR will spool about 2 hours, and I get done with the show and I remix it. And while everything's being output, it takes a while, so I go out there, grab something to drink, and hit play. You know. And it starts playing and blah, 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 Guthrie, blah, blah. They're standing in front of the house like, you know, like they do. And fast forward at 60 and I can just watch it. And I get up to real time, 2 hours, nothing but this. Why are they doing this? Let's see what you guys have to say. Second Light Farm says it's a very easy explanation. The most important people in the world are journalists. Two journalists are journalists. They're heroes without capes, and they control the headlines. That's what I thought, too, at first, man. That was my first, well, they care because it's one of their own. Well, it's not the journalist. It's her mom. And the network, the journalists, like, this is the right-wing network that's doing this. And, I mean, that's a clue that it might really have something to do with Epstein. That's my gut, but I'm not sure. Second Life Farm also says, nope, that's the same state. Oh, you correct. I got you. He did comment and he changed it to Guthrie. Well done, sir. So that's the same comment twice. So I would see it. Okay. Hilux says Guthrie to misdirect the sheep from knowing that these fucks are eating jerky made from kids. I'll take that as being Epstein. I think it's a high probability. We haven't done an episode really breaking down the Epstein files yet, and we will. at some point. I haven't had time to dig into it deep enough to do it justice for, you know, a 90-minute or longer show. But I will tell you that the biggest takeaway from this isn't just the people that are pedos that we knew were pedos. To me, it's the role that Israel plays in all this. And it's so in your face if you actually look at it. It's hard to say otherwise. And boy, I'll tell you what, nothing brings them out like that, right? Then Bruce says, wall-to-wall coverage, even Hannity, was to avoid talking about Epstein files and the shit Congress is funny. Okay, so that everybody that sounded off anyway, I'm going to go back over here and see if anybody else was saying anything about it differently. You got more people saying Epstein. All right, that's what I thought too. The reason I didn't just come out and say it is I am always open to being wrong, and that's just where my mind goes right now. And I was wondering if anybody had another explanation. And I didn't want to steer your thought process. I wanted you to actually think about it and tell me what you think. I can't think of anything going on right now that they'd want to supplant, and specifically supplant on the right more than Epstein right now. You tell me if you come up with it, because we're going to keep going. The next government shutdown. That's what we're hearing about now. The government shutdown, right? And of course, the Democrats, as it rolls, will start. Right now, they've said, we're just fighting against ICE, which they're having no effect on ICE whatsoever. ICE is fully funded all the way through the next fiscal year. Okay? DHS as a whole, though, has some holes that weren't funded under the big, beautiful bill. And they are shutting down all additional funding to DHS, right? Which includes money to pay the ICE agents, which of course they'll eventually get paid. And I can't say this for sure, like I always do about the military, but my instinct is they'll be able to get money. That they'll be able to get like interest-free loans from their banks where they have direct deposit, and the bank will just be like, when the money comes, we'll take it. Because that's what's always happened for the military. But I can't confirm that yet, so I won't say that, but it's most likely. Those guys are going to keep working. They're going to keep working. They're going to keep doing their jobs. So this is affecting nothing. But it's also going to affect paychecks for TSA, who I assume will probably end up in about the same way, that they'll be able to get money in some way on some sort of short-turning, you know, 0% line of credit or something like that, especially through like credit unions and stuff like that. They've always been good about it for government workers. But it maybe we should be asking something about TSA then, right? So the TSA, for those youngins out there, which probably half the audience it would fall under that term for me, they're actually a fairly new organization. They've been around about 25 years. They were created after 9/11. I believe it was in the Patriot Act. It was one of the many things the Patriot Act did that had nothing to do with patriotism. And it was not letting a crisis go to waste, in the words of Rahm Emanuel, right, before he said it. Because Republicans do it too. We had just had the worst terrorist attack in United States history, probably world history, unless you're going to count things like, you know, dropping atomic bombs on people or firebombing, you know, Dresden or something like that. But from a standpoint of like straight up actual terror, probably the worst thing ever happened. Good time to sell people on something. Well, if it wasn't for lax security at the airports, this would have never happened. We need this specialized group of trained professionals that make $14 an hour to fill you up, that wear stupid-looking uniforms and blue gloves to funnel your junk to make sure it doesn't happen. Again, we're going to call them the TSA, and we need them. So they put that in place. And so we went from the airlines paying for security collectively, like all the airlines that get together, and this is the size of the airport, and this is how much security we need, and this is the equipment we need, and we're all in it together, and you know, you guys fly 10% of the flights out of this airport, so you should pay 10%, and this company pays 40% because they have 40% of the flights, and this company has 20, and this company has 3, and they basically created a pool, and all the airlines pooled, and it was their cost of doing business at the airport, and so those people worked privately, and they reported back to the airlines as a whole and to the owners of the airports, and they provided security. But Jack, 9/11 happened, like I said in the intro, and every single thing that those guys brought on those planes at that time under federal law was allowed. if there was any mistake that caused it, and I'm not going to go into the whole alternative theory, there were no hijackers, the planes were remote controlled, or, you know, the Nash and Juice Space Penguins did it, or whatever the fuck y'all are going to come up with. The mainline story used to sell what was being, what we have today, the TSA, was that it was lax airline security to let it happen. If there had been a TSA following the same guidelines at the time, every one of those motherfuckers would have still got on the plane. They just lied. I know that's crazy, right? And so they put these incompetent boobs, most of them. I'm sure there's some good people that work for TSA. I'm sure people that are very dedicated to their jobs, very professional. But overall, they come off to me like a bunch of retards. I'm sorry, but you do. And it's probably not your fault if you work for TSA and you're mad at me for saying that. Honestly, I think it's the position you've been put in. Like, it's a government job with government bureaucracy in a government situation managed and paid for by government, right? Which is the problem that we actually have with it. A lot of the people that work for TSA today, if that's actually what you want to do, would probably be working for some form of airline security today and making about the same money. Maybe better money. Maybe slightly less benefits and more money. With a hell of a lot more input on things. If we did not create this thing. But now we have this thing. But then what we learn is this thing that's so important, government has to do it. When government wants to throw a tantrum at each other from the two sides of the aisle and shut the government down, you can cut the paychecks off to the people that are necessary for this national security reason. I'm just going to spitball this. If United and American and Southwest and whatnot were all collectively funding airline security, and the government shut down funding to things, they'd still pay their bill. Now, before you try to defend government here and say, well, Jack, I mean, this isn't really apples to apples. This is really important. We do need this oversight. It's overall. We haven't had another 9/11 since now, so clearly it works. We ain't even had a successful hijacking. Ain't you been paying attention? Not of an American plane anyway. And they've caught plenty of bad people. I saw it myself on TV. I know David Copperfield made the fucking Statue of Liberty disappear, but I believe what they told me is real on TV anyway. Okay, fine. Even if all you say is true. How competent is the government when it comes to airspace? Not outer space, airspace, that we fly airplanes through. Well, you're going to love this. You're going to fucking love this. You have to know both things independently to realize they're connected, though I'm sure by now, because I discovered, I added this. This is the last line of the last story of the show. I added this 5 minutes before I started. That's why we started a couple minutes late, because this showed up in the Telegram group. If you didn't know the first thing, you wouldn't recognize this thing as being the issue. So last week, on Monday or Sunday night, there was an edict by the United States government. They shut down all traffic in and out of the El Paso airport, which is the closest thing to the U.S. military is Fort Bliss, which is where the second thing happened. Okay. They shut it down 10 days, no planes in or out. And they put out to like private pilots and shit. If you enter the airspace around El Paso, you risk being shot down by the United States military. We are not fucking around. We mean it. You better stay out of our airspace. Okay. Okay. They think there's some drone activity, but they didn't really tell us why they shut it down. Now, you need to understand, the El Paso airport is not a Dallas-Fort Worth. It's not a Logan, right? It's not a Chicago Midway or a SeaTac or something like that, right? It's not that big, but it's a very critical airport with a lot of connections through it into all that regional area, you know, New Mexico, out to California, Vegas, Phoenix, up into Colorado. Like, it's an important airport. It is not a small thing to shut down an airport like that for a fucking week and a half. But we got drone act, and it might be the cartels. It could be a foreign government. We don't know. Oh, are you going to fucking love this? Yes, that's a picture of a fucking party balloon. Yes, it's CBS News. So, yes, it is not something that is coming from some lunatic website. For those not in the video, let me read this article to you. You're going to love this. Sources say airspace closed after drone test dispute and balloon incident. United States military forces in Fort Bliss successfully disabled Mexican cartel drones that entered the U.S. airspace near El Paso this week. That's their story. Anti-UAS technology neutralized at least one cartel drone. Mexican cartels regularly and actively fly drones along the border. So you shut down the airport for that? Earlier this week, an anti-drone operation near the southern border engaged objects initially believed to be foreign drones. A high-energy laser destroyed one target that was later identified as a harmless party balloon. These events heightened concerns about military operations near civilian air routes. FAA Administrator Bradford responded by imposing a 10-day airspace closure over El Paso International Airport. The restriction prohibited all flights below 18,000 feet and warned that violators could be shot down. Bedford issued the order without prior consultation with the White House, Pentagon, or Homeland Security. Really? Really? A regional FAA administrator had the authority and the clout and the willingness to shut down a major United States airport for a week and a half without higher approval? Can you see why I don't believe they actually shot down diddly fuck all of drones? Can you see why I don't buy that? Can you see why I don't think you needed to shut down a fucking airport to do that if that's what you were doing? Can you see why the whole thing comes off like a fucking bad comedy thing on SNL? Back when SNL was funny. They shot down a fucking party balloon with a fucking directed energy weapon. Swampcast. Maybe they shot down ET. Maybe that's what really happened. I don't know. I'm going to tell you, like, this just shows me that the government should only do something that only the government can do in our current system. And there's some things that I would like to replace with private industry. There really are some things I'd like to do. But there's some things I go, can I guarantee you it would work? Even if what we have now is flawed, can I guarantee you it would work at least as good or better? No. There's a few things. The roads argument. I'm pretty sure that it's private companies that already build roads. But I can at least play fair enough to say, we can put a pin in that one, and there's a lot of other things to go after first, okay? You can't convince me that private industry can't handle security for the airlines, because from the time I was a little kid and got on my first aircraft in Jacksonville, Florida, when I was freaking 5 years old and barely past shitting my – well, 4 years old and barely past shitting my pants, until 2001, they did it. And it was just fine. It was just fine. And the other side of it is, and this is something that nobody wants to talk about, if the airlines are supposed to provide security, and the airlines, through gross negligence, fail in that security, then what do the families of all the people that die on a particular airplane turn around and do? They sue American or Delta or whomever, right? They sue the whole conglomerate because it's not just the airplane that they were on, but all the people that were paying. Like, this was your agent that performed this action. Yeah, sue the federal government. See how that works out. Go to federal court, have a federal official oversee your suing of the federal government for the federal government's failure to make good on its promise to protect you. Now, if the federal government's trying to deport somebody, there's lots of judges that'll be all about defending that person. But the kind of thing I'm talking about, those kind of lawsuits, they never go anywhere. What else could we replace? That not only we look at it and go, theoretically, the private sector should do this better. But let's say 40 years or more, the problem was there. There was a private institution or group of institutions in place to provide for it. And it generally worked. And government took it over. Any one of those can be rolled back. And that's all money that doesn't go to the government. And it lets the airlines fund their own security, which they should do. which they should do. Anyway, it says this cough schools cough. Yeah, the schools. I know we can get by with private institutions of learning. And I know we could even have the government pay for it and still do that. And I know that all the schools would be better if we did, including the ones that were still public. I know that because competition creates quality. That's how that works. Anyway, with that wrapped up, let's go ahead and sign off with you now. I appreciate everybody that tuned in. If I missed anything that you put all caps for me to comment on, I'm sorry. I think I got everybody who had an opinion about the Guthrie thing. And I think I can I agree with you guys that it probably is about Epstein more than anything else. I don't get it, though. I still don't get it. Because they could have just not talked about that and talked about four things instead of one thing. Because the one thing was so overdone. It's weird. Again, I haven't seen anything like it since the days of the auto-scrolling real death timers that they remember. Anyway, before I go, who remembers them? Go try to find one now. Remember we had months. Turn on Fox, CNN, MSDNC, whatever, right? And they had like this thing, like 1 million, 1.4 million, 1.5 million, 1.6, like this real-time death counter just running. Non-fucking stop, they ran that shit. Go try to find it now. Go try to find a video of an early clip from the COVID days with the real-time death counter in it. They're very hard to find. And if you do find one, it's going to be, you know, some YouTuber or something that used it as a montage. You won't go find it in the archives of ABC or Fox or anything. They all act like it never happened. When you bring it up, people are like, well, I don't know what you're talking about. You fucking know what I'm talking about. Anyway, before we go, let me remind you, if you want to help this show and the work that we do, you can help us out by doing your online shopping at tspaz.com. That is T-S-P-A-Z, tspaz.com. Today's item of the day is I don't even know how to say it. It's in our Chinese name. Dor Lodi, I guess is how you say it, propane torch and weed burner. It is the time of year where you should be getting your gardens ready, and that either means dealing with things that grew in your garden over the winter that you didn't plant and you don't want there, call those weeds, or things like cover crops that you did plant and now you need to terminate them. And a weed torch is a great way to do that. It's also a great way to deal with weeds like in your driveway coming through the cracks or along the sidewalk and things like that. And the thing about a weed torch, you don't actually burn the weeds, even though it says weed burner in the title. You actually just cook them, like sauteing them. Like when you throw spinach in a pan and it turns bright green and wilts, that's all you have to do. It ruptures the cells and then they drop back to the ground. This is a fantastic weed torch, and I wanted to get it to you this week because we're in the time of the year. And there's also a lot of other great things a weed torch does. I use mine when I'm making biochar, when I'm starting the grill, when I'm burning garbage. Like, and what red-blooded American man does not want a blowtorch? Do you even get to keep your man card, folks, if you don't have a blowtorch of some kind? This is a great one. They sell for about $50. It's two-piece. It breaks down, goes in that little bag right there. I have the same one, except it has a different name on it. I went to get one of these for a family member about a month ago who needs one and won't buy one for themselves. And they're the kind of family member you buy things for. You can probably figure out who it is from there. And I went to buy the one that I recommended and it was gone. And I just looked around with what was available, realizing that since these are all kind of like Chinesium brands, somebody still made this exact same one. And this is it. I ordered this and before I gave it to that person, I compared it side by side, and except for the fact that the bell is silver and doesn't come painted, it's exactly the same. And they probably did that because the paint burns off the bell and it probably generates complaints anyway. But this is the exact, again, it breaks down so you can put it away. Super high quality, well-built, heavy duty. It is a perfect tool for the job, and it's $49. And I really recommend everybody have one of these for things like weed control and for things like burning and other torchy things. Yes, I said torchy things. But I also recommend you get a good one. And that doesn't mean you have to get the one I'm recommending. I'm just telling you it's the third one I bought and the last one I'll buy. Because most of these are shit. I had one by a brand called Flame King before this. It literally started falling apart the day I got it. I had to tie wrap the handle together. The fucking igniter fell apart. I mean, it just, I've never seen anything so bad. And so I went on a deep dive to find this one. And it always sucks when you, you find something you like and you recommend and it goes away. The one good thing about the kind of Chinesian manufacturing system is lots of companies are doing this. They form, they create a brand name, and they source from the same producer. That's what's going on here. There is no doubt. I mean, I literally even put the front end on, like, swapped them, and it worked, right? Just to point it out that way. Like, they're the exact same thing. Anyway, with that done, hope you guys enjoyed today's show. Have a great day for the rest of the day. I'll catch you tomorrow with another Just Jack show. We got a special show coming on Wednesday, an interview with a guy kind of in the land down under, right? So it ain't Jeff Lawton, though. It's a different guy from that place. And that means because of the time differential, I believe I will be live at 3 p.m. this Wednesday, way later than normal. That may actually help some of you tune in that don't get to tune in for the lives anyway. Take care, guys, and I will catch you tomorrow with another episode.
They said you should have a house the American way. A dollar down, a dollar a month, and you never have to pay. There's a better way to do this. Let me show you a better way.